Hi, just a quick technical note. Rick and I recorded this show and then I was editing it and I was like, that sounds a little weird. And I realized instead of using my fancy microphone that I purchased with funds from the Garden Fork Patreon patrons, thank you guys, I was recording through the built-in microphone in my iMac, which doesn't sound horrible, but it's not as good as I would like Garden Fork Radio to sound. And as you know, I kind of rant about the poor quality of some of these very high-end podcasts. But I thought it sounds good enough, and it is Rick and Eric talking about interesting stuff, so I just thought we'd go on with the show. All right? Here we go.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right.
Me.
No one knows that you do that before we start the show, but they're going to now.
All right.
Hey, thanks for downloading the show. This is Garden Fork Radio. My name is Eric. I have a DIY YouTube channel and a podcast where I talk about interesting stuff with interesting people. And today I have one of my most very interesting best friends, Mr. Rick Kennerly. Welcome, sir.
Good morning, Eric. How are you, my friend?
Good. How are your pipes? Did you do some singing?
I did a little warm up there, got to entertain the folks and be presentable best I can.
I did last week's podcast with Will Wallace, and I was up at the house and I used my older, it's a Blue Snowball microphone, and it sounded remarkably different than the fancy microphone I have here in the Brooklyn office. So,
I actually noticed that.
Yeah.
That you weren't on your regular microphone. And of course, Will with his fabulous pipes,
yeah.
he can make any microphone sound great.
So today we have kind of the big story we're going to talk about is my Labrador's gargantuan paw infection. And then we were going to geek out a little bit on bees, but there's kind of a bigger story there. And talking about procrastination and the weather. So why don't we start with the weather, Will? I mean, not Will.
Well, it's Rick, by the way, in case you... Thanks for having me on the first time here. I'm just have a lot of sympathy and the people out particularly in the Midwest right now. You're all members of the Garden Fork community, or you're in our thoughts because it's been a really wicked time out there. I saw an article here. What was it? 8 tornadoes a day for the last 12 days.
Yeah.
And some really pretty severe damage. In some ways, that excites me because I used to kind of do that tornado chasing when I was a kid.
Yeah.
When I was stupid. I just want people out there to know we're thinking about them, and to when the tornado alarms go off, be safe and be careful.
That is a kind of a eerie alarm because I grew up in the Midwest, and when those things went off, that was pre-cell phone when I was a kid. But even now, right. They go off, and then your cell phone blows up as well.
Yeah.
To the point that I was in Brooklyn, New York the other night, and we get these, what I usually are like amber alerts or something.
Right.
We got tornado warnings, seek shelter now in New York City.
I guess nothing came of it, but.
No, but, the first thing in my head was like, well, climate change has come to New York City.
Big time. We thought it'd be about the water.
Yeah. Well, I actually intentionally live on a hill 100 feet above sea level, but.
We finished our first climate assessment here in Virginia Beach, and they're actually beginning to, I think they're going to pass a regulation or an ordinance or whatever they do for zoning to take 3 feet of sea rise change into any building codes now.
Very smart.
Yeah, because we've got a lot of places. First, this Thomas Jefferson referred to this area as a malarial swamp, and it is. And we've got a lot of places where developers bamboozled the city, I think,
yes,
and built in very inappropriate places. And now the drumbeat is for the rest of the taxpayers to fix what the developers sold these people by raising roadways and better drainage and that kind of thing. But you know, we have a double whammy here, because as we're sitting on a geological teeter totter, and as Canadian glaciers withdraw, melt and withdraw, the pressure is coming off that end of the teeter totter, and we're actually subsiding or sinking because of that. Damn Canadians, I tell you. And so it's, we got a double whammy there of both sea rise, sea level change, and we're just sinking, and it's causing a lot of people some trouble. You built on a hill when we bought this house, and this was, almost 20 years ago now. I looked at the flood charts and built in an area that was higher than almost any place else in Virginia Beach, just because I didn't want to deal with it. And even though we are not in a flood zone, I still buy flood insurance.
Very smart. You know, people complain about building codes and having to go to the town hall and apply for a permit for stuff. But a lot of what they're doing is preventing future headaches.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, like in my town upstate, you have to be, I don't know how many feet it is, but you have to be X number of feet from a wetland or any kind of body of water. If you want to build a road, it's a big deal. And they're basically preventing future problems that they're going to have to fix.
Right.
One reason. But the other is wetland preservation. So.
Yeah. When you say they're going to have to fix, what you mean is the taxpayers are going to have to fix.
Yeah, I pay taxes in two places.
Yeah. I'm a little leery of people who think that private benefit and public risk is a good idea. You know, they used to be back in the old days. It's called High Street for a reason. People that of means lived on the high street up high, away from the water. Poor people lived down by the water. Now that we've reversed that situation, mostly because of cheap flood insurance, people are with means are building down below and taking all and then the public takes the risk through
subsidized
flood insurance.
Yeah.
And that's annoying to me.
All right.
we're veering into the political. Yeah. So we don't want to do that.
Well, let's talk about
speaking of political infections, how's the paw infection?
So this all started, I think, a month and a half ago. It's been a blur. One of my Labradors, Henry, who's 13 years old, but still very mobile, had just like a little dimple of a cut on one of her paw pads in her back foot. And I take her to her doctor, and they're fantastic doctors there. There's four doctors in the practice, and it's called Sand Road Animal Hospital. It's in right near Canaan, Connecticut. And they're like, okay, let's just treat this topically, keep it clean. Keep it out of the water. Don't let her lick it. And we were just spraying it with the Gentesin, which is a topical spray for that. And then we went to bed, and then we woke up the next morning, and her foot was as big as a turkey drumstick.
Ooh, oh dear.
And she's an 80-pound lab, so she had, she got decent. So she's a female. She got, okay-sized feet, but it was like twice. The infected foot was twice the size of her other foot. So I just threw her in the car and went to the vet, and they were like, ooh, look at that. So that began pill with the antibiotics by pill, and then also using a cream, an antibiotic cream, coupled with Manuka honey, which we'll talk about a little more later.
Really?
And soaking it in betadine twice a day. And then for the first couple of weeks, I would take her back to the vet every other day or every third day for them to clean the wound, the infection out. Because at this point, her skin is starting to slough off. If you've heard of that they did not culture the infection to figure out what it was, but it just reminded me of that flesh-eating bacteria you read about in those clickbait articles on the web.
Yeah, MRSA.
Right, to the point that it looked like, her paw looked like a deboned pork shoulder.
Ooh.
Most of the fur is gone. She lost half a toe. You could see the tendons. You know, their claws actually grow from quite a ways up in the foot, up in the paw, and you could... It was, I mean, I don't like gory stuff, and I'm like, woo. And the camera operator is just stoic. She's just like, this is how we do it, you know.
Good on her.
And it still is pretty draining. You're constantly having to monitor her. She's over the hump now. Here's the overview. She's over the hump. It is getting better. The skin is growing back now. Now it looks like kind of pink pork skin. You know, like on the side of a ham or something.
Right.
But what an endeavor. You basically have to either watch her constantly or put the cone on her. And cones have their own kind of fraught problems, because if you leave them alone with the cone on, they can get into trouble. So you have to keep them contained, you know, just keep her in the living room.
Right.
And I didn't go anywhere very far for very long. But there was this whole process. I've become a vet tech, basically. In cleaning the wound and wrapping it back up. And I got a couple pointers for you if this ever happens to you.
Okay.
First of all, it's a lot easier to have two people to try and clean a dog's infected paw. Luckily, Henry's pretty – she's a Zen Labrador. She just stands there trying to do this on Charlie Pup. Our energy dog would be much different.
Sure.
Everything has to be clean and sterile. We've been through several boxes of the blue gloves, you know.
Right, right.
Tons of paper towels, and we have a bunch of dog towels which we use. But every time we do the whole operation on a dog towel, and the first part with the cleaning, and then once it has been through the betadine and the saline, then I flip the towel over, so I've got a clean portion of it under her paw, and I put a paper towel there as well. And then I found that the best thing to do is you have to soak her in betadine and then clean off the betadine and the sloughed off skin with a syringe with saline. And those square food containers that you buy at the grocery store, they have a blue top.
Yeah.
Gladware, maybe it is.
Maybe, yeah.
But the one, it's a square one, about 4 inches square. That is the best container to put a dog's foot in, to put the betadine in, and then to clean it with the saline, I found. Because we were using like stainless steel bowls and other stuff. And invariably, that betadine will get kicked over a couple times a week.
Either right.
By me or the Labrador, Henry. So you get betadine going over your floors. Lots of towels. And then I take the towels and I wash them with a little bit of bleach after every time. So it is exhausting.
Yeah. You need some sort of respite care. Somebody needs to come in and help you.
Well, my knees really hurt and my back hurts. And I'm like, why do my knees hurt? I'm like, oh, I'm on the floor for a half an hour every morning and evening. You have to get the pads, the bandage pads that are non-stick, because you don't want to damage the skin that's starting to grow back. And then you bandage it with the gauze. And then you use vet wrap, which is this rubbery bandage material made by 3M. And the 3M stuff is the best, but then I bought some in bulk on Amazon. And it's not as good, but it's what I have.
Sure.
And I found that, you know, you wrap up your dog's foot with the vet wrap. Don't do it too tight. The Labrador does not like it when it's too tight. You want to wrap it farther up their leg than you think it should. But you put the gauze bandage up all the way up to their, I think it would be considered their elbow almost. Mm-hmm. And then you don't want the vet wrap on their fur because it rubs and they don't like it, I found.
Right.
And when you're done with the vet wrap, double it over on itself to make like a tab so you can find it again. Because over the day, the vet wrap kind of almost melts into itself and you can't find the end to pull it off.
Ah, okay.
And then they make another product called Elasticon, which looks like an ACE bandage with adhesive on it. And the vets use that. They will wrap the whole thing with that as well. But that is really hard to get back off again.
Right.
So I put just two pieces of that across her front paws, because when she walks, that drags on the sidewalk or the floor. And so it kind of keeps the vet wrap from abiding, falling apart.
Right. Wow.
And man, it's it takes 20 minutes.
Yeah. And you have to do it, what, three times a day, twice a day?
Well, now it's once a day, but we were doing it three times and then twice. And the key thing is everything is clean. Once you're done with the betadine, you have to change gloves, because you've used those gloves to take all the infected wraps off and everything.
Right.
And you just have this pile of stuff that you need to throw out every time. I am amazed at the amount of waste after just changing a dog's paw out, you know?
Yeah.
So think about what hospitals go through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She Who Must Be Obeyed, of course, was an RN.
Yeah.
And as she says, I used to be a nurse. You know, the amount of waste that goes through wound care, particularly, you know, just trying to keep everything sterile. And of course, in particularly in a hospital now, you know, that's about the last place you want to be if you're a sick person.
Yes. So get out of here.
Yeah.
So I guess for a while we were using Manuka honey. So
that's right.
The camera operator, I just saw one of the vets, and she texts me and she goes, you need to go find Manuka honey. And I'm like, what is Manuka honey? So
from New Zealand.
Right. So it is a kind of honey that has a very high antibacterial counter. And honey has antibacterial qualities. So it depends on who you ask as to whether it does or not. But according to Wikipedia, it has some. And Manuka honey is from New Zealand, and it has some of the it has a higher antibacterial quality than regular honey does.
Right.
And honey is also hydrophilic, I believe.
Right.
So I'm told, I could be wrong about this, please let me know, it sucks out the pus basically out of the infection. So I was in New York City and I'm like, where am I going to find this Manuka honey? You can buy it online. But I went to the Whole Foods in Union Square in Manhattan, and they had it in varying degrees of strength. I guess higher the rating, the more antibacterial quality. So I bought the highest rating, you know, and it's this little 4-ounce jar, and it was $60.
Yes. you might be buying the real stuff. There apparently I've read is a lot of fake or counterfeit Manuka honey on the market now, because it's so valuable and it's so difficult to produce. It comes off of just one specific plant. When they say Manuka, it's actually that's the name of the plant that the bees are working. And it blooms just at one particular time, and they have to use it. And I think there's something about it, if you leave the bees on it too long, it poisons the bees. So you have to get in there, get the honey and the, or the nectar, and then get the bees out of there and let them process it. But I've read about it, but I can't remember all the details. I do know that it's being used a lot in wound care all across the United States in professional settings, not just
all right. Because on the Wikipedia page for it, which is, you know, user edited, it's not peer reviewed, it said that the Manuka honey, it has not been proven to have medicinal qualities. But maybe that was someone that made an edit that is a skeptic or something.
Yeah, it could be.
I'm paraphrasing all that, but. Man, it just raises the tension level in your household, because, you know, you might think your spouse isn't wrapping it right, you know, or your spouse who deals with horses on a regular basis, whose legs are wrapped all the time, might be telling you you're doing it wrong, you know.
Right.
So just breathe and think, okay, maybe someone else knows more than I do. But
and the dog doesn't care. You're taking care of her.
You know, but lately she has not wanted to come over and get her foot rewrapped, and she all of a sudden has decided she doesn't like the betadine soak, and I wonder if it stings now or something.
Maybe. Well, that means there's might be nerve endings there now. That's good.
Yeah. Anyway, it's pretty draining. So
yeah,
if you see a cut in your dog's pad, take them to the vet right away.
Yeah, I haven't actually heard of one blowing up like that. But I've had dogs, you know, ears were always my problem.
Yes.
Dogs with a lot of ear problems. But anyway, well, I'm glad Henry is on the mend. She's lucky to have you for a dad.
Yeah, we go to the vet now, and they've always known us, you know, on a first name basis, but all the different vet techs are like, oh yeah, I saw that in the back. Yeah, that's something, you know? So she's like a science project for them.
Yeah. Your best bet, if you're ever sick, is to be interesting. If you're just run of the mill sick, you might have problems in a hospital or in a professional setting, but if you got an interesting case, a really interesting case, they're going to pay a lot of attention to you.
That's all I need.
Do you shop on Amazon? I shop locally and also on Amazon and other online stores. If I need something very specific, like seat covers for the new used car we just bought, I will go online and sometimes use Amazon. And Garden Fork happens to have a dedicated shopping page on the Amazon site now, which is very cool. It is an affiliate linked page. We do get a finder's fee for anything that you buy when you start shopping from that page. But I list there interesting items that I think are worthy of the Garden Fork DIY person. It's amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. If you would start your Amazon shopping experience, no matter what you're looking for on Amazon, start at Garden Fork, and that would be great. It's amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. That's amazon.com/shop/gardenfork.
Well, you wanted to talk about bees.
For just a quick minute, my theme here is don't panic for this.
Okay.
So that's the theme of the story, which I just told the end of the story. But we got new bees on our Brooklyn rooftop, and I'm very hands off when we first put the bees in. You know, we got two packages from Man Lake in Pennsylvania, and they were driven over to New York. We put them up. And when I put the queens in there, you put a queen in her cage, and the bees will release the queen by chewing through the sugar cap. And I leave them alone for like a month. I just don't open the hives. I feed them sugar syrup at the top. But I noticed one of the hives, the population was not booming nearly as much as the other hive. And this is kind of a good reason if you're thinking of beekeeping. First, think maybe not. But if you're really going to do it, get two hives, because it's an A-B kind of testing. Then you can see, well, why is that one booming and this one not, you know?
Right.
And so I was looking at the frames, and I couldn't find any eggs or capped brood. The eggs looked like little white worms at the bottom of the frame. And, you know, my eyes are, you know, not the greatest. And it was a cloudy day when I was doing this. Bright sunlight really helps to see the little white worms at the bottom of the cells. And so that was last week. And I thought, you know, I maybe think I see an egg at the bottom of a couple of these. This looks like either a weak queen or there's no queen at all, because there was no cap brood. So the queen had not been laying any eggs. And I was like, what's going on here? And then I was thinking that it would become what's called a worker laying hive, where there's no queen and one of the workers develops their ovaries and starts laying sterile eggs, which are just drones, which is bad.
Right.
And I thought, I'm just going to leave this for a week and see what happens. I'm not going to panic and go buy a queen. You have to have the closest place here. Queens are $65 at the very least. And I'm like, I'm not going to panic. It's still early in the year. And so I went back yesterday and looked, and this hive was still pretty weak looking, but there was a ton of eggs.
Okay.
And the curled larva in the bottom, and a few, I don't think I saw any capped cells, and I was like, okay, either the queen was unmated in the package, or the queen.
I was just going to ask that.
Or the queen died and they raised a new one. I don't think that's possible. Or something else weird happened where she wasn't laying for a while.
Yeah.
So it was just a kind of a thing. I was like, I got to order a queen. I got to do it. And I was like, why don't we just wait and see? So,
you know, it could be though, particularly in New York City, I don't know how many beekeepers there are there, but it could be she was flying out continually trying to have a mating flight and not running into any drones.
It's possible because there are other hives near me because Greenwood Cemetery is right next door and I have two friends with hives there. But the drone population in early spring is very low.
Right.
So so there you go, a little deep dive into beekeeping. But the bigger lesson is just breathe, and sometimes waiting is the best option.
Well, and thinking. I've seen people, they think there's a problem in the hive, and they immediately just rip it apart, trying to troubleshoot. And then they find a plethora of swarm cells that may be...
we're already there.
I mean, all kinds of things. But I mean, it may mean a lot of different things. And lots of times it's best just to sit back and wait and think about it a little bit and let things kind of work themselves naturally. If you have to requeen this, at least here in Virginia Beach, if you have to requeen now, you've lost the honey season, essentially.
Interesting.
So
there you go. So anyway, just a little thing there. Something just popped into my head, nothing about bees at all, but I did want to give a shout out to Erin at The Impatient Gardener. She's had some really good videos on YouTube lately about planting trees. Really great. Just great information she shared. She gave great reasons for why you should buy bare-rooted trees.
Mm-hmm.
And then this week she talked about planting, I think they're hydrangeas, which I have no interest in, but... it's just neat to see your yard and her method of planting. Just very down-to-earth videos. So look for The Impatient Gardener on YouTube. And she's going to be on the show because we're going to talk about compost soon. She wants to talk about compost.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you need to go see her videos just to see the Cadillac garden she built. those raised beds are for the ages. Right up there with Egyptian temples and that kind of thing. I mean, it's amazing the work they've done with that.
And the giant Newfoundland dogs that wander into the frame.
Yes.
I think they're timed. I think her husband's on the side and goes, and action.
You know, I was just looking at the Facebook page, the Garden Fork discussion group, which anyone can join, by the way. And we have a member. And I think it's Toshifumi is the way we pronounce his name. He's in Japan. He's near Tokyo. And he is one of the most prolific and gifted gardeners that I have ever had the pleasure of seeing. His plot is huge.
He
makes tons of food out of it. And essentially he either eats it or he gives it away to his neighbors. And I'm like, wow, what a man. But if he's listening, bless you, fellow. You're a great gardener.
Yeah, he is. And he's always sharing on the discussion group on Facebook, which I really like. And we don't have a lot of international members on the group and Facebook there, but he's just, I don't know. I would like to go to Japan. It's, I'd really be into the food, of course, because I watched that Samin Nosrat's Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, and they were in Japan, and I'm like, I want to go there. and then maybe I could go see Toshifumi as well. That would be kind of neat.
Yeah.
So.
Tokyo, I'm not that thrilled with, but if you get over to Kyoto, which is the ancient capital of Japan, which is where all the shrines and temples and whatnot are, it is just fascinating to be there. So, you should go. And,
I love ramen. So I would like to go to some ramen shops, and evidently some ramen shops, you don't order with the person, you order at the vending machine and then hand them a ticket. There's this, I don't know. It sounds interesting, but the trains there, high speed trains. I mean, what's that?
Oh yeah. You know? Yeah. Even back in the 70s after Vietnam, I was stationed up in Misawa, which is at the far end, north end of the, main island of Honshu, where Tokyo is located, and this little horse head up there, peninsula.
Where it snows 364 days a year.
184 inches of snow a year. And the bullet trains would come through there, and all they would have, these trains coming through, I think back then about maybe 120 miles an hour, and all there would be these little signs with a choo-choo on them at the crossings.
Hey, watch out.
Yeah. And and troops were forever getting down in front of those trains and, you know, getting their remains scattered up and down the countryside.
You clearly irritated some general to be sent up there, Rick. Did you say something to somebody?
it was all because of my specialty in electronic warfare. I had kind of a subset of specialties that required me to be up there. But I was not thrilled. I would have volunteered to go back to Vietnam, I think. Yeah.
All right, so we won't talk about the Faraday cage that's encircling your whole home. So,
you know, I do have one, actually.
Hey, real quick here. I was wondering if you wanted to join the Garden Fork email list. It's Maura Eric. I don't know if you want that or not. But the best way to do that, if you go to the gardenfork.tv site, there are signups all over the place. There should be one on every page. Also, in the show notes for this show, if you're listening to it in the iTunes app or one of the other podcast apps, to click on the little, I think you click on the little text thumbnail of the show and the notes will pop up and there's a link in there. Or just go to gardenfork.tv and there should be a sign up there. All right. Thank you.
Procrastination.
Well, Rick and I were talking before we started the show. We was yak for another 20 minutes, but it's not all podcast safe, let's just say. But I was saying to Rick that I am seeing a new talk therapist, and I was talking to him about why I can't follow through on my own projects, but I love doing other people's projects. And yesterday, a buddy of mine who owns a building like mine, one of his tenants wanted an outlet right near the window to plug in an air conditioner. And the power, the outlet in the room, because these are 1900 buildings, there's only one outlet, was all the way on the other side of the room. And I'm like, okay, that's easy. We're just going to run wire mold, which is a surface mount conduit. You can paint it. It kind of looks not horrible.
Right.
And like in 2 hours, I was done. I was like, ooh, you know, I did it. And I was like, all right, that was done. And then I'm like, why can't I just do my own projects like that? Well, I'd rather go out and do someone else's.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels good to help other people. I think that's part of it. And sometimes, you know, your own projects, they're just never ending. More and more, I look at the yard with a jaundiced eye. And I'm going like, yeah, look, that grass is growing again. I just cut it. You know, next time I'm going to get the no cut grass, you know, or the self mowing grass. Because
don't
you
Troy Belt hear that.
Yeah. Oh, well, I have a Troy Belt generator, just waiting for the next storm. But, I mean, you can do so many other things with your time than, mowing acres of grass.
Yeah, so that was just my thought. I would like to hear from you guys about your procrastination issues and how do you do that? Like my basement is just, whenever I'm done with a project, I have a bucket full of tools or a milk crate full of stuff, and I end up stacking it in the basement. And now I'm like, you know, okay, I have a very nice finished basement full of junk. So
yeah, you know, I think the thing for me with most projects is it's the, I'm going to do this, but in order to do that right, I'm going to have to do this first.
Right.
And in order to do that, I've got to do this other thing first. And then you end up, that's how we ended up with a kitchen remodel. I wanted a gas range. And then I found out, well, that the floor is not tiled all the way to the wall. It's just tiled up to the appliance. The
cabinets. Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, well, you know, and these cabinets begin to look a little shoddy, you know, and then next thing you know, we've ripped out the entire kitchen. We got wall to wall tile now in the floor. We got all these outlets and everything, but it started off, all I wanted was a gas range. Yep. That's all I wanted. And, you know, several thousand dollars later, the project is finished, but every project I have at the house seems like it takes on that quality. You know, I just can't patch something. It has to be done right.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So have you, are you growing the Klee Lab tomatoes this year?
No.
All right.
I made a decision This is the first year that Klee Lab has gone commercial with the tomatoes through Proven Winners, which you buy at most of the orange stores usually.
We can say Home Depot now.
Oh, okay.
Because Home they're Depot. Involved with Troy Bill, so.
Okay, Home Depot. But I did not anticipate, and so I wanted to support that by showing there would be a market for it. And I'm just buying my tomatoes from the Home Depot, from the Klee Lab. But I did not count on the fact that they were not widely available.
Right.
And we do not have any in this area. And so now I didn't plant any seeds because I was counting on supporting the program by buying the tomatoes. And so I had to go and just buy some of the regular tomatoes, the German Johnsons and the mortgage lifters and all, a bunch of those that I got from my neighborhood nursery. But I did not plant any Klee tomatoes, and I'm a little upset about that because I loved them. I'm a big supporter of the program.
Yeah, you're like the big PR machine for them.
Yeah. We even got the main horticulturalist from Klee Labs on the Thomas Jefferson Hour podcast once to talk about his tomatoes. So, it was just kind of a swing and a miss this year. Next year, I will certainly plant seedlings, although I still plan to, to buy some of the plants if they ever make it into the production here, just to show support. Because if people are not buying them, then Proven Winner will drop them.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think people are at their destination. What do you think?
Probably so. And they're probably crying, about procrastination and can't get things done. And we've been real downers today. You and Will had a nice upbeat talk.
Oh, well, I thought we said some nice things here. We talked about Aaron's YouTube videos and Toshi Fuma's garden.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I guess so. Yeah. I was trying to think. You've got a video that I have not seen yet. What is it?
Some Instant Pot sous vide videos?
Not sous vide. I did not know Instant Pot, by the way, made a sous vide immersion heater.
And so. It's cheap and it works. So.
Okay. I'm thinking about that. There seemed like there was another one here that I'd missed, but right.
A follow-up to the wood chip gardening or back to Eden method of gardening, showing a year later what it looks like. And that'll be posted on, if I can get my act together and not procrastinate, tonight. So, excellent. Well, actually this podcast will post later than that video will. So, that video will already be live. But, I just wanted to show people whether it works or not. And it's kind of interesting to see it in various scenarios, perennial beds and vegetable beds and things like that. So,
all right. I was just going through the Garden Fork group again. I see Michelle's having good luck with her garlic.
Yeah.
I'm always glad to see people, growing their own garlic and onions.
Yay.
All right. Okay, my friend. Well, I think that's it for me. I've got a lot to do today.
Yeah.
I'm glad we finally got to talk.
Radio@gardenfork.tv. Thank you again, everyone who has left iTunes reviews. I will read some more of those soon. Just you can leave a review on the podcast app on your phone now.
Oh.
You have to go to the Garden Fork description page. Click on Find Garden Fork on your podcast app, and then in the whatever little, you click on the Labrador icon, and it'll have a little thing about the show, and it'll say review, and you can click on 5 stars, and please do so.
Okay, well, I've done it before, but I think I'll go do it again. It's been a while. You can leave more than one review, because it really does help people find the show and join in on the fun and see all the videos and stuff.
All right. So make it a great day, everyone, and we will see you.
Talk to you later, my friend. Bye-bye.
Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz of hollowbooks.com, and our music is licensed from uniquetracks.com.